Hello, I'm Christopher Badger.
And I'm Mark Davis.
We're barristers at Six Pump Court, and would like to welcome you back to the Environmental Law News Podcast, brought to you in association with LexisNexis.
Thanks, Chris. In this podcast, we'll be looking at three recent planning decisions about exploratory drilling for fracking sites, the Office for Environmental Protection Strategy and Enforcement Policy, and the Environment Agency's regulatory statement.
First up, to frack or not to frack? That is the planning question.
Absolutely. And this is all about three called-in planning decisions taken by the Secretary of State on the 7th of June 2022 for different exploratory fracking sites. So one in Cheshire, one in Rotherham, and one in Surrey.
Now, Mark, is the Cheshire site the one that our colleagues in Chambers, Robert Griffiths QC and Nicola Strachan, were involved in back in January of 2019?
Exactly the same, and it's taken over 3 years to get a decision, which is absolute madness. But what's interesting is that between the inquiry closing and the decision being made, there have arguably been some huge movements in climate change and the landscape in this country. So, for example, you've got the publication of Net Zero, the UK's contribution to stopping global warming, from the Committee on Climate Change. That was May 2019. There's the case of Stevenson and the Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government from 2019. That's the Talk fracking judgment that quashed the government's policy on shale gas. Then there's the written statement from Lord Bourne of Aberystwyth concerning the government's fracking guidance. Then there's the Climate Change Act 2008-2050 Target Amendment Order 2019. And finally, the written statement from the Secretary of State for Bays on the 4th of November 2019 about fracking, essentially announcing a moratorium on it.
So what did the Secretary of State say about all this new material?
Well, somewhat remarkably, in my view, he said this: while there have been developments in government policy since the close of inquiry, in particular on net zero, this decision is based on material that was relied on before the inspector, including the Committee for Climate Change's 2016 net zero report. The Secretary of State does not consider the development of government policy materially affects the decision in this case.
And so what happened?
Well, in the Cheshire case, the Secretary of State refused permission because the amount of greenhouse gases to be produced during the exploratory stage contrasted with the relevant local policy, and that was the main reason for refusal.
Indeed. And in the Rotherham case, against the new material, the net zero report, etc., was all considered, found to not be of any material relevance, but that the proposal was also refused permission, this time on the basis of visual impact in the greenbelt because of an acoustic fence.
Exactly, you know, another very local decision. And in Surrey, in fact, the exploratory drilling has in fact been approved, although the Secretary of State and Inspector were at pains to make it clear that permission for the exploration phase did not guarantee permission for the production phase. So a real distinction drawn there. And here the proposal wasn't thought to be at such odds with any particular local policies, such that the application should be refused, as in Cheshire.
Very interesting. So essentially, whilst we've got big overarching targets for net zero and key statements on fracking, it's still very much a local application, application by application, case by case issue.
Exactly, which, you know, given that planning is essentially all about local development and local impact, perhaps that isn't such a bad thing, but we'll wait and see on that one. Both and all of these cases are, of course, still in their time for review, so it may well be that they're challenged one way or the other. But anyway, second up, the OEP has published the final version of its strategy and its enforcement policy.
That is right. The OEP has published its final strategy and enforcement policy after consultation with stakeholders on a draft going back to January this year. This is a significant step, as the OEP is likely to set the tone and the pace for environmental regulation of public authorities in the years to come.
Okay, well, let's start with the OEP's role. It has four strategic objectives. Firstly, sustained environmental improvement. Secondly, better environmental law, better implemented. Thirdly, improved compliance with environmental law. And finally, organisational excellence and influence.
And the OEP has four main functions: scrutinising environmental improvement plans and targets, scrutinising environmental law, mainly focuses on the implementation of environmental law, advice and enforcement.
Indeed, and it should be borne in mind that it is not the OEP's remit to regulate private businesses. And as such, it is not the OOP's role to take enforcement action against private entities or individual people. Fundamentally, the OOP's role is holding government and other public authorities to account for their environmental commitments in environmental law. However, where a private business undertakes public functions, there are potential overlaps in enforcement remit, and in such circumstances, it is intended that the OOP will then work with primary regulators in order to prioritise effectively.
Now, along with the strategy was the OEP's enforcement policy, which provides guidance on when the OEP will take enforcement action. In order to do so, the OEP must decide whether a breach of environmental law was a serious one. Factors that may be taken into account in assessing seriousness include whether the failure includes a point of law of general importance, the frequency of any conduct over time, the behaviour of the public authority, a high degree of responsibility includes an authority acting deliberately, recklessly, or negligently. It's self-interesting, as negligence doesn't have a definition in the policy, and it isn't ordinarily difficult to establish negligence in the context of environmental breaches, as the term often equates to a failure to put in place and critically enforce proper systems for the avoidance of any breach of environmental law. Other factors include harm or potential harm, and a catch-all, any other relevant factors.
Well, just taking one of those and looking at harm, that's broken down into a number of different considerations, including likelihood of harm, scope for recovery, and wider issues. And there's a plethora of factors that the OEP will need to take into account, and a catch-all for anything else it considers relevant.
And in responding to feedback from the consultation stage, the OEP has made it clear that it will take into account the cumulative impact of related issues when making judgments about the seriousness of any matter and how it prioritises, and that the OEP will monitor and report on a wider set of targets than just those that come under the Environment Act in order to pursue the objective of sustained environmental improvement.
Now, at the same time, DEFRA is also consulting on the environmental targets required by the Environment Act 2021, a consultation which actually closes today, the 27th of June. There has been reported to have been a general concern about the perceived limited ambition and scope of a number of key targets and the lack of policy initiatives in order to meet the relevant targets. So, for example, the government has proposed a legal binding target for a 40% reduction in agricultural pollution by 2037, whereas the wastewater sector must reduce pollution by 80%. This is despite the fact that pollution runoff from farms is arguably one of the biggest causes of river pollution.
But given the potential for quite weak legal consequences in the event of a failure of government to meet a target, concerns also go further than this. And this all feeds back into the OEP's role. Its job in holding government to account and improving political accountability will be key to ensuring environmental benefits in years to come. Finally, the Environment Agency has published its regulatory statement.
Absolutely. Now, the regulatory statement is intended to provide an overview of the EA's regulatory activities, strategic goals, and plans to improve the way it delivers regulation. Its strategic goals include achieving a nation resilient to climate change, healthy air, land and water, and green growth and a sustainable future.
The first point is that the statement is, understandably, very high level. This is not a document that will descend into the detail of how the Environment Agency will achieve its goals. Nonetheless, the wording of the statement can give an indication on those elements that are at the forefront of the EA's current thinking.
Quite a lot of the statement looks at efficiency and effectiveness. For example, key elements of improvement look at improving the permitting system and compliance processes so that they are efficient and provide value for money and getting the EA's basics right. So improving its own efficiency and effectiveness. This inevitably leads the reader to the question as to whether the EA recognises that it doesn't have the budget to achieve everything that it would like to do.
The Environment Agency wants to identify more innovative and effective ways to secure better environmental outcomes. So that includes the use of management systems at permitted sites to give operators greater flexibility to manage risks and to support the development of mechanisms to recognise those going beyond compliance. This factor implies an increasingly hands-off approach to regulation. Although it should be noted that the statement makes specific reference to a significant programme of farm visits, and there's a very clear identified need to make full use of additional resources and legal powers in tackling waste crime.
But there is no reference at all to the steps that the EA will take to ensure that the legal requirement to reach net zero by 2050 is met by those it regulates, or the need to halt the decline of wildlife by 2030.
As ever, and as always unanswered by a high-level document such as this, the key question is whether the Environment Agency is going to have the resources it needs and the appropriate levels of experience in those that it employs to achieve a sustained environmental impact. Thank you for tuning in for this Environment Law News podcast. For more information on any of these stories, or if you would like to discuss any of the topics raised in more detail, please contact Six Pump Court on 0207 797 8400, asking for either Christopher Badger or Mark Davies, or contact our colleagues at LexisNexis in the PSL Environment team.